Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Lovumentary Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Bagley, and this is episode number 33 with Lara Doyle. It's hard to believe that we just only a few weeks ago interviewed Lara. It seems like it's been forever. We're now in Boston. I'm sitting in my car as traffic whizzes by, listening to the rainfall. This is the quietest place I could find to record the intro, and it's just... You know, just a couple of weeks, a month ago, we interviewed her. She's probably, since the interview, been the person that I've talked about the most. What she has to say is, like, it's super interesting, but it's also incredibly controversial for a lot of people. So I'm actually really excited to publish this podcast, and I hope that it generates some discussion, because I'm really interested to hear what you guys think. So Lara is the author of The Surrendered Wife, A Practical Guide to Finding Intimacy, Passion, and Peace, as well as The Surrendered Single, A Practical Guide to Attracting and Marrying the Man Who's Right for You, and one other book called Things Will Get As Good As You Can Stand. She has devoted her career to working solely with women. She doesn't do couples coaching, and she doesn't work with men. She works specifically with women on intimacy training, because she feels like women are the gatekeepers to intimacy in relationships. And if a relationship is lacking intimacy, it can probably be traced back to things that the woman is doing to stifle connection with the man. I totally get how sketchy that sounds coming out of my mouth, as I am a man, but I hope that you guys listen to this podcast and enjoy every minute of it, because I really did. The interview actually went for an hour and 15 minutes, but I'm only posting about a half hour of the content. I'm going to try and make the entire hour available. So keep your eye out for that. And also, if you have a love letter to contribute to the love letter challenge, we would really love it if you would write one. The idea is that if you had one last letter to write to the person that you love most in the world, what would you say? And we think that you should write that letter, because people should know how much you love them. And then you can send a copy to us, and we'll post it anonymously on the website to encourage other people to write love letters. So you can do that on the site. It's at lovumentary.com/love-letters. And yeah, we hope you have an amazing Thanksgiving, and that everybody stays safe, and that you have so much love in your life. I know I love you. I'll talk to you guys next week with another great interview. Okay, bye.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, that's so nice.
Thank you. It makes me feel really good.
We're good to go.
All right.
You want to kick it off?
Sure. Well, so we have Lara Doyle with us here today. You are the best-selling author of The Surrendered Wife, and also the author of Surrendered Single.
Right.
And you've written more books, have you?
I have another book called Things Will Get As Good As You Can Stand.
Awesome. Well, we're so thrilled to have you here on the podcast. Thank you so much.
It's really exciting to be here.
Do you want to just tell us a little bit more about how you got started doing the work that you do?
Yeah. You know, I never dreamed I would call myself a surrendered wife when I was newly married. I was 22 and well-educated and smart, feminist. And I got married and was super happy. And then I just set about trying to improve my husband. You know, I was just going to help him be a little bit tidier and help
him. I'm just going to sit over here on this side of the room and chuckle.
Okay. That's a good idea. I was just helping him, Nate. He just needed a few little tweaks. You know, he's pretty good. Little fixer-upper project. But who knew that helping in wife language was actually critical and controlling and overbearing and nagging in husband language. And so pretty quickly things started to deteriorate. And I was feeling really lonely in my marriage, and I was really puzzled, because we started out super happy, and I was just so amazed that he loved me, and I loved him so much. And So I decided to drag him to counseling because that's what you do, right? You go to marriage counseling when things aren't going well. So, you know, kind of not realizing that even by saying that, it was like, okay, you're a loser. You know, you're a bad husband. And really what I wanted to do was take him to counseling so the counselor could fix him. And then I could finally be happy. Mm. That was my plan. Mm. So
how'd that go for you?
Yeah. yeah. Not so good.
how far into your marriage was this?
We were really struggling like 4 or 5, 6 years in. Finally around 6 years in, I started asking women who had really, what I considered really long marriages at the time, which was 15 years. And now I've been married for 24. So that doesn't seem that long to me anymore. But I just started saying, you know, what's your secret to a happy marriage? And I remember one woman saying, well, I try never to criticize my husband, no matter how much it seems like he deserves it. And that sounded really foreign to me. Like, I didn't really even understand what she meant. So I just said, yeah, have you got anything else? Because, like, I'm not going to do that. So, yeah. And then I remember another woman saying, like, oh, well, for us, it's been really great. My husband handles all the finances for us. Like, my paycheck just goes into our joint account, and he takes it from there, and that's been great. I was like, yeah, got anything else? Because I'm not going to do that either. And these things just were so counter to what I'd seen growing up. They didn't really make sense to me at the time, but I became really desperate, and in my desperation, I just really didn't want to be divorced. And I was really seriously considering throwing out, you know, the man that I consider like the best husband in the world now, you know, the love of my life. And, what happened was, I became willing to try some of their suggestions. And so it was just this big experiment for me for a while. I was going to try what everybody suggested. And if it worked for us, great, I'll keep it. And if it didn't, I threw it out. And what emerged were these 6 intimacy skills, that I use to this day, that I practice to this day.
Oh man, I have so many questions already. If it feels anyway, part of the reason Nate and I started this project was because we felt like love in the country was relatively polarized, at least the way it's talked about. On the one hand, it's, you have kind of the romantic notions of what love is, and they're over-idealized. And then you have the kind of hopeless perspective on marriage, the high divorce rate, the infidelity, the culture driven by celebrity scandal.
Abuse. Yeah.
Abuse. Yeah. And so somehow it seems that divorce has become more of an option for people. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about, for anyone out there who's listening who may be on the fence about getting divorced. I know you were at that inflection point in your own relationship.
Yeah, I was.
What steps you'd advise them to take?
Yeah. Well, I see relationships. I see it like everything else in life, where if you get trained and you have skills, you're going to succeed with it. I always think about, like, my parents are divorced, so that was my modeling. By definition, I'm using a failed recipe, doing what my mom did, right? And I did do exactly what she did. Looking back, I can see I just copied her. But if you think about getting in a car for the first time to drive it, and no one's ever taught you anything about driving, you're probably going to crash your car and you go, whoa, driving is so dangerous. This is crazy. Why would anybody drive a car? And it's, you know, it's actually pretty simple. We could teach you a few skills, and then driving becomes relatively safe and practical. Or I think about, like,
I love that analogy so much.
Yeah. Isn't it right? Like, where did we expect to learn it? My generation is certainly from mostly broken homes. Your generation, you're raised by a single mom, Melissa. Yeah. So, where were we supposed to get that modeling exactly? And there's not relationship 101 at schools or anything else. So I'm trying to change that. And I think one of the issues that I have with the marriage counseling model is there's this whole idea like, well, we have to go back to your childhood and think about your relationship with your parents. And, you know, I just think like if a kid is going, like a teenager is going out to get a job for the first time and he goes on a couple of interviews and doesn't get the job, and you wouldn't say, well, okay, we need to go back to your childhood and look at what's wrong with you about, you know, when you were growing up, why you can't get a job. It's like,
no. We're going to teach them interview skills.
We're going to help them get a resume together, right? It's really pretty simple stuff. So that's, to me, the big missing piece here. And that's why we offer intimacy skills training. It's not that important to talk about what happened when you grew up. What's important to talk about is the kind of woman that you want to be now and the kind of relationship you want to create. And here's the skills to get you there.
So you mentioned earlier that when you were doing the couples counseling and everything, and then you started doing experimentations in your marriage, that you came out with 6 principles.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to run through those?
Sure,
really quick,
sure. Yeah. So the first one is self-care, meaning that it's up to me to take responsibility for my own happiness by doing at least 3 things a day that I enjoy. And they're just frivolous. Like, they're just only for the purpose of making me feel good. So I love to play volleyball. That's on my list. I have a long list, actually, of things that I can kind of schedule them in just to make sure I'm getting my 3 every day. So naps, hot baths, manicures, pedicures, a cup of coffee with a girlfriend. Girlfriends are big. Girlfriends, sisters, moms, to be able to connect with other women. Playing a game, going rollerblading with my little niece, or sightseeing, going to the bookstore, having a cup of tea, all these things. So every day it's my job to get enough of those in so that I feel good. And there's also the I call it remedial self-care, which is enough sleep, enough, you know, good nutrition, enough to have some reserves. So, cause it normally, it does take that to have a good relationship. You have to have those reserves. So self-care is the first one. Then we have relinquishing inappropriate control. So I sometimes think it's my job to weigh in on what my husband is wearing. It's not. So I try to refrain. I do refrain from commenting on things that are really pertaining to him and not pertaining to me. What's so funny, Nate? I think it's hilarious.
I'm just living in my own little world right now. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Respect is another one where I've just really learned to, that I don't always have to agree with my husband, but I prefer to honor him, honor his decisions for himself, by listening to him. Maybe I've learned the phrase, I hear you. I use that all the time. Doesn't mean I agree or disagree. It just means I'm listening, because that's the first duty of love, is to listen. Vulnerability is another one. Striving to come to the table, sort of palms open, with, you know, instead of like, you know, we never spend any time together, which would be a nag and a complaint. You know, I would try to get down to what's really going on for me and say, hey, I miss you. Yeah, I feel like I haven't seen you in a while. Mm-hmm. Gratitude's another one. Usually one of my assignments for my clients is I ask them to give their husbands or boyfriends at least 3 gratitudes a day. So it could be, thanks for working hard to support the family. Thanks for taking out the trash. Thanks for driving me to go get my car worked on, or even, you know, whatever simple things are going on. You want not only a culture of gratitude, but for it to have that, be your perspective. Mm-hmm. Then there's receiving graciously, which is just when you get compliments or gifts or help, that you just smile and say thank you instead of saying, what? Oh, my hair looks nice. Oh, no, I haven't washed it. Or you like these shoes. Oh, I got them on sale. But just to really take in the things that other people are giving to you. Yeah, that's 6.
Got him.
Nailed him.
Awesome. Nailed it.
My head is spinning with questions. So I know one of the major criticisms of your first book is the idea, and I love that the response is, you know, you have to read the actual book.
Yeah.
But it's easy for people to look at it and say that it's about submissiveness.
Right. Or worse, subservience or obedience.
Can you tell, even with me, like even having a sense of your book, and sitting here with you, and that like piece kicks up in me.
Yeah,
we were getting ready to come visit you today, and Melissa's like, "Oh boy, this is going to be an interesting interview."
Yeah, how are we going to get around this surrendered thing? Right,
it's something that is several people have said in the interviews that we've done that's kicked up some stuff for me. Is when a wife says, "You know, the man is the head of the household," and so when it comes to making decisions, and I don't agree, the decision goes to him.
Hmm.
And every part of me just kicks up on that. So I'm just so curious. Like, you seem like a really strong woman.
I'm kind of a spark plug. I would never say it that way, actually. Okay. Cause my experience is my husband really wants me to be happy. That's super high priority to him. And whenever I'm coming from, my desires, my pure desires, and not manipulation or criticism or control. So if I'm saying like, I want to go away for the weekend, or years ago I said, I want to make dinner, but I don't want to do the dishes. And he was like, cool, I'll do them. you know, so I'm just getting what I want here. And people talk a lot about compromise in marriage, and that's kind of not my experience. You know, my experience is that I'm operating on the feeling and desire level, and my husband's doing the thinking. So like, I'll say like, I want a new car. And he's like, I don't think we should buy one right now. And I'm like, yeah, but my car's, you know, I really kind of want something, you know, looks newer. And he's like, yeah, I don't think we should spend the money right now. And what he's thinking is coloring what I want. And what I want is coloring what he's thinking. Mm-hmm. And that's how we negotiate. So it doesn't feel like it's so he's in charge. But I will say this, that for me, the word surrendered is a really beautiful word. It's a spiritual word. It's something we all have to do every day. If you're stuck in traffic, you want the cars to move, but you can't make them move. But you could listen to Audible book, you know, audible.com, or music you love, or you can talk on the phone. You can, and you could be, wow, I'm glad I had this time to myself in the car. And that's what surrendering is. It's just accepting the things that you can't change, being grateful.
I think what's fascinating about your story and how you sort of in a roundabout way came to write The Surrendered Wife is an inflection point that a lot of people are going through in their marriages,
yeah,
especially around that point, somewhere between like 4 and 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, I know that you've talked about some of the reasons that you would say like that you would the circumstances under which you would condone divorce.
Yes.
And so can you talk a little bit about that and the difference between those and then
yeah.
and what you were feeling?
Yeah. And this is, I thought this was so great for clarity, was that there are the divorce I endorse would be one where the woman is not safe. And the ones where she's really not safe are where he's physically abusive, obviously. If he's chronically unfaithful, like he's just not the kind of guy that can be faithful to one woman. There's one affair after another. Or a man who's actively addicted to drugs, alcohol, or gambling. Mm. And sometimes my clients will try to add in other things like, oh, he's addicted to food or cigarettes or something else. And that hasn't been my experience. These are the three things that we see over and over again ending in heartbreak for the woman. But so the good news is if you're not married to one of those three, then you have a good guy, you know, not a perfect man, but one that you really can have an amazing relationship with.
There's a huge potential behind it.
Huge for a really gratifying, satisfying, passionate relationship where you feel desired, cherished, and adored every single day. And where you also, steadily become your best self.
Mm.
Because that's what happens in a good relationship, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. There's one that you didn't talk about that I think a lot of people struggle with, and I'm curious your thoughts, and it's the emotional abusiveness.
Verbal abuse. Mm-hmm. Verbal abuse, yeah. Yeah, so I love this topic because I think it's an area where there's a lot of misunderstanding. So first, let me just say every couple, every person, myself included, has yelled mean things loudly with swear words to their partner. Okay. If you haven't done that yet, you know, you will. All right. So, and in a way it's verbal abuse, right? You know, if I'm standing there swearing at my husband as loud at the top of my lungs, you know, saying the meanest thing I can think of, that is verbal abuse. So, so by definition, you know, there's verbal abuse. There has been, not for a long time, but in my marriage. And so it's interesting to me that we go around acting like this is a, like an exceptional situation when there's verbal abuse going on. It's like, really? That happens? That happened
it's
here?
It's fairly normal.
It's right. fairly normal. But I do have a lot of clients, especially women, coming and saying, well, my husband's verbally abusive, so that's why I need to get divorced, or that's why, you know, he's bad and he's the one that needs to change. And remember the first time this came up, this woman was telling me about this really a lot of years ago. And she said, yeah, he called me a this, this, that, and the other. And she goes, so I told him, well, he's a, you know, bleepity bleep, bleep, bleep. And it really clicked for me like, they have a culture of verbal abuse in their relationship. And she's blind to her own verbal abuse, but she sees his.
Right.
And what I've seen consistently over and over again is when you clear up the disrespect, the criticism, the nagging, the verbal abuse also clears up. Mm-hmm. Now, not to say, so the divorces I endorse, like you've got your drunks and your cheaters or whatever, you know, are those guys maybe also verbally abusive? Yeah, but we're getting rid of them already, right? So if you've got a basically good guy, I'm not worried about the verbal abuse. Mm-hmm. You can fix that.
Right.
It's within your power.
Oh boy, so many. I'll go to the one that I meant to ask before I lose it. You talked a little bit in the beginning about the importance of having other women in your life.
Oh yeah.
As support systems.
Yeah.
Something a couple of other people have said too, a trend that I've started to notice is the idea that you kind of keep problems in your marriage in the marriage and work them out there. But I know for a lot of women, it's important to have outlets to be able to express.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious what your perspective is on keeping things, issues in particular within a marriage, inside the marriage versus having outlets.
I think it's absolutely 100% vital to have a safe place to go. Speaking of Deborah Tannen, I think one of her studies showed that women use like 2,500 words a day more than men or something like that.
Wow.
So you think about it, literally like it's 6 o'clock at night. He's totally out of words for the day. He's done. And you still have 2,500 words to go, you know, so where are you going to go with that? And so the answer is girlfriends. And yeah, there's going to be times when my husband gets on my very last nerve and I don't necessarily want to bring that to him because that doesn't always serve me, right? Like I put a really high premium on our connection and our intimacy. So, but I might go to my sister and say, you know, John walked across the new rug just after he'd polished his shoes and now the rug's ruined. Oh, and I really hate that, you know, it's really, you know, you know, and she could go, yeah, that's a bummer, you know, but also kind of hold me to the standard that we're now not just going running down the male bashing road, but you know, she knows that, it's important to me to treat my husband respectfully and she's respectful of my husband because I am.
Mm-hmm.
So both are true. You know, I need to be able to vent. Everyone does. And also I'm not going to run away with that and make that into a big, bashing session.
So it needs to be a healthy outlet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say it's messy in that moment when
right.
I'm calling it, that it's not going to look all pretty. And you know, I know that I respect my husband, but I wish he wouldn't have done that. It doesn't
right.
look like that. It just looks like whatever swear words or whatever mm-hmm. comes out in that moment. But I'm also taking it someplace. I'm not taking it to somebody who would say, yeah, you should leave that jerk. You know
right.
what I mean? And there's a lot of women that will do that.
Yeah. Which is
yeah.
where the danger happens is when you start venting to friends or family and then all of a sudden they start to build a grudge against your significant
yes.
other and
yeah.
they start to encourage you to maybe abandon the relationship or
exactly.
they start making you question why you're even involved with that person. And
yeah, really
I forget
true.
What article I read it in, but there was a list of things written by a married woman about what women who are about to get married should do. And one of them is to have a pact with some of your girlfriends that whatever you say about your spouse can and will not be held against him.
Yes.
So like, that
yes.
people show grace for the messiness
yeah.
and the stuff
yeah.
and that yeah. respect is still there.
Yeah. The overarching commitment is like, hey, you were at my wedding. So, and you support this union and yeah, it's not always perfect. Doesn't always
right.
look beautiful on the inside, but mm. most of the time now it does actually
mm.
surprisingly. So I need to vent a lot less than I did when I didn't have skills.
Why do you think that is? Is it the skills themselves that have?
Yeah, the skills themselves are like magic because, so I used to have this perspective. We had gotten to the point where, so I used to say to John, like, you know, maybe you should ask your boss for a raise or I think you could make more money. And so we got to the point where he like quit his job. He wasn't making any money. And our counselor actually was like, yeah, John can take 6 months off and you'll support the family. Now we look back and we're like, what was that idea? You know, but I'm glad we survived that because it was really stressful. But so during that time, you know, I was like beside myself with stress and pressure and resentment that I was making all the money and he wasn't. And what I learned was the magic of the spouse fulfilling prophecy. And what I mean by that is like, just like you give yourself an affirmation, like I ran a marathon or I have a successful business. You know, that everything I'm saying to my husband is an affirmation. So I was saying, why don't you ask for a raise? You're not really making enough. And that's how he saw himself in his wife mirror. And, so I decided like, I'm going to affirm what serves me better, which is like, you know, I found like you've always been a good provider, which is true. And then I used to say like, you know, I'm sure you're going to do well. And then for fun, I started calling him Mr. Moneybags. And around that time, he started his own company. And he's had it ever since. And he does really well. And he'd always worked for other people. So he started his own business, made it a huge success. And, you know, I just kind of realized like, gosh, I have all this influence, all this power to create things the way I want them to be by what I'm going to focus on here. So I don't feel it serves me very well to call my girlfriends and vent anymore, because I'm just sort of focusing on my husband's faults, and I know he's got them and whatever. I want to focus on that he's like really smart and funny and super thoughtful and makes my tea every morning and brings me a glass of water in the middle of the night and fills up the gas tank just because he goes, oh, I noticed it was low, so I filled it up for you. I mean, focus on that.
Hmm. You mentioned the word resentment.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that emotion and what two people can do if one or both are feeling that emotion toward one another?
Yes, absolutely. Because I was there. I lived on Resentment Lane for many years.
Resentment Island.
Yeah, I had my own little Resentment Island.
It's an oasis.
It's an oasis. It is. And for me, this goes back to, it absolutely goes back to self-care, because people... I can't get resentful unless I've overextended. So if I'm really focused on like, okay, what does Laura need? How does Laura feel? You know, am I tired? Am I hungry? Have I talked to a friend or just done something enjoyable? That's when I'm at risk for coming into resentment. Like, okay, I picked up his dry cleaning and I cleaned the house and I did all these things for everybody else. And then so I didn't have time to take a hot bath. And now I'm, you know, I want to hurt you because I did all these things.
Because it's your fault.
Because it's your fault.
I'm doing it for you.
I'm doing it for you. Even though you didn't ask me to do it, right? And my voice gets like that instead of the calm voice of a mature woman who's rested and relaxed and self-confident and self-possessed, right? So for me, the biggest antidote to resentment is, let's talk about the self-care. Okay, you're overextended. You're overtired. What have you done for you today? Let's talk about your pleasure. What are you going to do tomorrow? What's on your calendar? Let's schedule it like a hair appointment, because otherwise it might not get in there. And women are so hard on themselves, except when it comes to this. I'll say, like, how was your self-care? And they're like, well, I didn't get it in. And I say, I want you to be as hard on yourself with this as you are about everything else in your life. Like, let's make that self-care happen. Let's get on there. And that'll be a really valuable, like, we might spend a whole first coaching session just making her list of things that she finds pleasurable. And a lot of women who are struggling in their relationships don't have ready answers for that. They're like, I don't.
It's been so long since
they've
thought about it.
They haven't thought about it.
And so would you recommend that for anyone out there who is maybe feeling
that? Make a self-care list.
First, start with your self-care list. Mm-hmm. List of things, 20 things, 3 a day, put them on your calendar, put them on the Google, put them on the iPhone, put them in the Franklin planner, whatever you got, put them in there.
Mm-hmm.
Make them happen.
We talked about this yesterday, but I'm curious to hear your definition. How do you define respect?
Respect R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Means, yeah, that's how I do it. I spell it R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Ooh.
I get a little Aretha. I get down with my bad self. So respect is, not necessarily agreeing. First of all, I think that's the big, and it's not, so I'm saying what it's not. It's not, we associate, I think, with like, I have to respect my boss. I have to respect my teacher, someone with authority. And it's not even that, because a lot of times I know, looking back, like I used to give more respect to the stranger in a waiting room than I was giving to my husband. And so the way I think of it now is I'm when I'm being respectful, I'm just honoring his decisions for himself. I'm listening. And surprisingly, you know, a lot of the intimacy will be not what I thought, which is I thought I needed to get him to talk about his feelings for a long time on the couch. Mm-hmm. And now he'll just be talking about his marathon. Like he'll be talking about like, I'm going to leave some bottles here, bottled water in the bushes for myself here. And this is the path I'm going to train on. And this is the training schedule. And I'll just be looking at him like, you know, it's just, it's his voice. It's his face. He's my beloved. You know, there's intimacy in that. Like I'm glad I'm the one that gets to hear because that's what he cares about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I have one last question for all of the men out there listening.
That's me.
Most of your advice is directed
all the men,
to women.
All the men out there listening.
All the men, yeah. That's right, there aren't any. We're talking about girl stuff.
If you guys are still here, this one's for you.
Or for women listening who want to, you know, are working on being more and more of a surrendered wife or partner.
The women can relay this to the men.
Exactly. I'm curious, like, what can men... I say I'm curious.
Did we just come full circle with that?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going to stop cutting you off.
That's awesome.
Go ahead.
What advice would you give to men on how to support their women in being surrendered wives and also how to uphold kind of their end of a great relationship?
Well, so much of it is dependent on her. So a lot of times I had a man call this week asking for help. And I'm always like, yeah, I got nothing for you because it's all up to her. So first of all, but
I actually really like that answer.
Yeah. Doesn't that resonate
okay.
with you?
Okay. I'm gonna put an asterisk in here for some men out there because I want to just be clear about something. I think that could probably be interpreted by some men as like not having to do any of the work. And work is obviously a debatable word to use.
And the
putting
effort.
In the effort.
Effort. Uh-huh.
Can you kind of clarify that for the audience?
Well, here's what I love about men. This is my experience with husbands over and over and over and over and over again. And that is they are busting to put out the effort. They are happy to put out the effort. If they think that we are pleasable, if they think they can succeed with us, if they think they have a shot of delighting us or making us smile, they are all about it. And they think about it a lot. And they'll, it shows up in spades when you take out all of the other garbage that's kind of messing up that frequency, I would mm-hmm. say. Like you get the disrespect out and you get the criticism and the nagging and the control. Or the martyrdom, you get that all cleared up, and there he is, like, hey, how can I serve and protect and provide and delight? Mm. That's been my experience.
I love that. Laura, thank you so much. You're awesome.
Thanks
for letting us come to your house and hang out.
Really fun. I'm so glad. It's really great of you guys to come all this way.
I think that this is going to be
worth the drive.
I'm glad. Yeah. We usually whittle these down to 30 minutes, but I think we need to break it up and do two because I feel like everything was so good.
Aww.
Okay. Anything you want.
Oh, I feel so desired.
Just want you to be happy.
I aim to please.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
really appreciate
thank
it.
You, you guys.
This was great.
Yeah, it was totally fun.
And I kissed your lips, and for a moment it was heavenly. Cause you've been